Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Hello and welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. Thrilled to be with you as always. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach. He is, of course, Darren Bunch out in California on the Western Edge. Thanks for making us a part of your regular podcasting routine. We are on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Player FM, and now, as you know, at the fabulous GolfTripX.com. We are at GolfTripExperts on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find me at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E, throughout the online universe. But speaking of the online universe, when it comes to Darren Bunch, Darren, this news of your Twitter handle has literally shaken the online universe.
It is earth-shattering. It has
no, been, it's universe-shattering.
It has been 10 years in the making. People have heard us talk about it many times on the podcast. They've seen me on Twitter complaining about it. Back in the days when we started to jump onto the Golf Getaways handle, I got Golf Getaways for Instagram, but somebody had Golf Getaways on Twitter, and it turned out it was somebody who basically opened up the account, put a few posts for some travel company or something, and then went completely silent. I tried to reach out to him a bunch. I don't know if the person's dead. The company that it was tied to doesn't exist anymore. And for years and years and years, I have tried to work with Twitter to get that back or see if there's any way to do it. That process has become a little bit easier these days. And I went through the entire process, which is a lengthy process nonetheless, but I now am now see, there's the problem. I'm going to say Getaways Golf for the rest of my life probably, but I am now Golf Getaways on Twitter and Instagram, and I couldn't be happier.
You have made our lives so much easier. I can't even. It's right up there with, as Mel Brooks said, Liquid Prell as the greatest thing to ever happen.
Well, I did it all for you and the listeners. Well, thanks. It had nothing to do with me.
Thanks.
It was all to make it easier for
thanks.
Everyone.
You are so giving. I appreciate that about you.
But I tell you, man, it was a workout to get it done, and I'm now working on that similar process for another project, obviously, that I'm working with. So, which is how I found out that I could do it at this point. And you know, thank you, Twitter. I don't know. I didn't know I was ever going to say that, but I am going to say it now. Thank you, Twitter.
All right. So at Golf Getaways on Twitter and Instagram is where you can find Darren. We're going to get to a great, great interview that we have with David Purcell, who is the CEO of Purcell Farms and the great golf course there, Farm Links. Darren has been there. I have not, as you'll hear. But this is an absolutely fascinating bit of time with just a guy who has created an environment down in central Alabama that is beyond belief. So here is David Purcell, the CEO of Purcell Farms, Farm Links. We know you're going to love this one. Here you go. Enjoy it.
All right, so David, we're going to throw you a curveball right off the bat. Before we dive into all things Purcell Farms and Farm Links, I kind of have a follow-up to another interview that in my research I found you did many, many years ago. It was a lighthearted Q&A with a friend of mine, Brian Weiss, and he asked you, you know, a lot of people ask this question. He asked you your dream foursome among living golfers, and there was something I found really interesting in your response, especially all these years later, given the kind of polarizing times in which we live. But you had answered you wanted to play golf with President Bush, President Obama, and President Clinton. And I'm curious if that is still the case.
I would say I must have been on drugs if I said that, because they would not be in my top three right now. I was probably being more politically correct, and actually, that would be a fun foursome. You know, may drop. I think it'd be cool to have President Trump and Obama and Clinton. I drop Bush out. you know, because I felt like it'd be a little more entertaining if Trump was in there with those, with the other two. So,
well, there's certainly no doubt about that. You know, the reason I ask is because I found that golf is one of those things in life that for the most part, it kind of transcends politics. It's, we're rarely Democrats or Republicans on the golf course. We're just all golfers, right?
Correct. Yeah. And the cool thing I like about Trump is, I mean, this is interesting. All politics aside, he owns the golf courses.
Right.
So, you know, I'd love to ride in a cart with him and just kind of ask questions about owning, you know, owning a golf course and just kind of some things that he has seen from that perspective. But I don't know. It would it'd probably be fun for 18 holes, and then I'd want to get back to my normal guys.
But, well, that's a good way to say it.
You know what's interesting, really interesting about that, David, is that that makes total sense to me as somebody who has done what you've done, to be interested in that part of the conversation with somebody who has also done what you've done. So that makes total sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Occasionally, I do get to entertain someone here who actually does own a golf course, or maybe even be a high level executive at a golf course, and it's good to just talk shop with other other people that have been in the business. And as you guys know, we've hosted a lot of superintendents here, and it was the same thing with them, because you can really learn a lot just by listening to other people, maybe situations or circumstances that they have been through, and you know, found a very unique way to either survive it or to, you know, thrive because of it. So
that all makes sense too. We'll get to that aspect, the superintendent's aspect, in just a second, because it's for sure one of the most interesting, fascinating things about Farm Links and Purcell Farms. But let's start, for people who don't know, the actual story about Purcell Farms and Farm Links, because this backstory is pretty much unlike any other golf resort and course. I don't know if you know, but you probably don't. Darren and I are both Hickory only players.
Okay.
So we are partial to anything that is, comes from the early 20th century, pretty much. And for the business, the family business at Purcell Farms, it dates back to the early 1900s, which is amazing. And that start was in fertilizer. And I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Silicauga Fertilizing Company.
It was Silicauga Fertilizer Company for sure.
Okay.
And just very small town, you know, started by my great-grandfather in 1904. And that was before, I don't know how many golf courses were even in Alabama in 1904, but probably just a handful.
Mm-hmm.
But back in those days, fertilizer used to come out of the back end of a cow or a sheep or, you know, some animal. It was very organic. And it just kind of went from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the really the obvious question, and you kind of touched on it, there was not that much golf. There certainly were courses, but there were not that many golf courses around. I don't know that your great-grandfather, his name was DeWitt Alexander Parker. I'm just refreshing our listeners here, not you.
Correct.
But that he would turn the family business into a full-blown golf resort, an outdoor destination. I'm pretty sure he didn't have that in mind when he was doing what he was doing.
No. And the fertilizer business he was in was more agriculturally, really singularly agriculturally related. And back in those days, 98% of Alabamians had an occupation or participated in some type of agriculture. It was not like the, you know, the service industries and all the lawyers and stuff like that. I mean, everybody was trying to survive. And my great grandfather was the railroad clerk in Silicauga, which was actually a pretty big job, because Silicauga was founded at a place where two railroad tracks crossed, and they, you know, there was a depot there, and he kind of ran the depot, and he did the started the fertilizer business on the side and operated that until 1930. He passed away. My grandfather, his son, Howard Arrington Parker, came in and, you know, took the ball. It was still agriculturally positioned. And in 1956, my father married Howard Parker's daughter and who was my mother, and so he married into the business, but it was at that time that the company really started to take off and go in a way that was less agriculture and more kind of specialty, like golf courses, ornamental nurseries, some specialty agriculture. And the concept of controlled release fertilizers began to blossom. But we were still a very small town based fertilizer business back in the 1950s and early 60s. Started to grow, got bigger in the Southeast. Just really all the markets were growing kind of with the population and all. And Jim and Chris Purcell, my mother and father, had three children, my brother, my sister, and I'm the youngest, all worked in the family business. And it was just kind of an expected rite of passage, but also a great opportunity for the kids. But I was the most creative, probably of, I don't know, almost all my family descendants that I know of. And I was a little bit of an introverted kid growing up, but I just loved to, you know, rearrange my room and build, you know, work with Lego and just all kinds of, I was always building stuff. And, but I was also a golfer. I took up golf when I was about 8 or 9 years old, loved to play. My dad did not play. My brother didn't play. My sister didn't play. My mother didn't play. So I had to go out and, you know, find friends that liked to play at a little 9-hole course in Sylacauga.
Can I interrupt for one sec? Just because it's interesting, if nobody else in your family played, what introduced you to the game at 8 or 9? How did you actually say, this is something I want to do?
Yeah, I had a couple of friends who played, and there was like a lot of small towns, especially in the South, there was a 9-hole course that that was built in about 1965, I guess, and was kind of a very plain course, but to a 9-year-old kid, it was kind of like Augusta National. So I went out there with these friends, and we would go out and kind of knock it around, and I actually got to be a decent player, not a great player, but a decent player. Played, in college, not on a team, but I'm just always enjoyed playing. And then when I came back to work for the family business, I found golf to be a great game to build relationships and ultimately customers. So now I'm a very creative guy and I'm also a golfer. So with that, kind of came the idea, and being in the fertilizer business, kind of came the idea of Purcell Farms and what we had, you know, the program that we ran here called the Experience at FarmLinks. But the golf course itself was an idea that I had that was, it was very unique in its positioning. It's the world's only research and demonstration golf course, an 18-hole course, beautiful course by Herds and Fry Environmental Golf Design from Columbus, Ohio. They were the architects. And the course was designed to showcase kind of the latest, greatest of, you know, a lot of different things that would be introduced to golf course superintendents, whether it be our fertilizers, which were very unique. Toro became a partner. Club Car was a partner. Syngenta was a partner, BASF was a partner. We had all these huge companies come in and want to participate with us because we were bringing in about 10% of the golf course superintendent market a year to Central Alabama. It was just such a cool strategy because we would invite, instead of putting 100 salespeople out on the road at about $125,000 per person fully burdened, that was a cost, annual cost, what we did was we put all that money back into creating the Epcot of golf, which FarmLinks was one of the key components of that. And we would fly people from all around the country and Canada and sometimes even Asia and Europe. And they would come in and participate in a three-day, two-night program that we called the Experience at FarmLinks. And they would learn, learn all about all of these products. And there's a saying that says, I heard and I forgot, I saw and I remembered, but I did and I understood. And so what we tried to do is to not do what everybody else was doing, you know, bring in a bunch of golf course superintendents to a Holiday Inn, feed them, you know, chicken and throw up a slide presentation and serve them some beer and basically leave. And that was an event. That was kind of what the industry was doing. And we would bring them in to a very, like a five-star, fully paid, they didn't cost them anything, fly them, we took care of their airfare and everything, and bring them into Birmingham, drive them to Purcell Farms, and we had them for a 48-hour period of time of undistracted, you know, just relationship-building time. And they did not know us when they came in, and we did not know them when they arrived. But we bonded with each of these groups, and all the groups were small. There was no more than 15 customers or prospective customers in a group that came in, and we enjoyed a 90%+ conversion rate just because of this time that we were able to spend. And you know, but so a lot of it was what they saw, but we also listened to them. You know, that was like a different focus group coming in twice a week. And we ran this program like, you know, for 42 weeks out of the year. So you do the math on that. There was a lot of customers coming in, and golf course superintendents are a finite group. It's not like, you know, trying to reach 400 million consumers in the United States. It was 16,000 golf courses, and of those, there were only about 11,000 golf course superintendent targets that we were going after. So we were bringing in about 1,000 to 1,500 a year.
Unbelievable. Is it too late for Darren and I to qualify as superintendent?
Well, I tell you, we ended up selling that business in 2006, but this technology we had called Polyon, it's still owned by Koch Industries. It was just a great, great product. I tell people it's kind of like, rocket fuel compared to kerosene. It would do something unbelievable for these golf course superintendents if they only understood it. It was a tool, and we were kind of like the pharmacist. We just needed to find out kind of what they needed to be done. How much nitrogen did they want released over what period of time? And we'd find out they would, a lot of, you know, people like superintendents in Florida, they're putting on somewhere 6 to 8 applications of fertilizer a year. And we, with our technology, we could reduce that to either 2 or 3 very easily just by, you know, putting more coating on and then they would, you know, they would apply it. And it's like a lot of things. You can generally, a good salesman can sell, you know, a product once, and then the product's got to kind of stand on its own legs. Mm-hmm. The good thing about this was, and again, we were a undercapitalized, small, family-owned business located in central Alabama, in a town you can't hardly pronounce. But the product was exceptional, and I knew that it was just a matter then of being able to tell the story in an environment where people could understand. You had to give them the time to really, you know, understand what the product was and how it worked. And when they got their hands on it and they used it, it was, you know, the cash register started ringing and the orders started coming in. And it was really, really, really a fun time in my business life. So now when we sold the business, we kept the golf course. And we still have, you know, some superintendents come in. We just don't own the fertilizer business anymore. So we are in the hospitality business with a very, very unique golf course that Golf Week really likes a lot. We've been ranked number one in Alabama ever since 2013. And as you know, we've got a lot of competition in this state. So happy to, you know, to be ranked or to be thought of so highly by, you know, Golf Week, but especially end user customers. They absolutely love the place.
Even though you don't have the fertilizer company anymore, the golf course itself is still kind of this living laboratory, I've heard it described, for agronomy practices. I mean, you've got different grasses throughout the 18 holes. As you kind of move through it, you kind of see these different experiences. Just talk a little bit about that and how it really is a one-of-a-kind golf course.
It is. We have about 35 different grass types on the golf course, but we have only one type of all of our greens are T1 bent grass. So this is pretty far south to have bent grass, but we have figured out a way to really grow it well in the south. And then we have fairways that are zoysia and a couple of different types of Bermuda. And then we have other grass types all around the place, you know, in tee boxes and different areas that we would try new types of grasses. And these golf course superintendents, when they were coming in, they really loved seeing all the different grass types. And so we were not afraid to try new things. And, you know, we didn't develop around the golf course. I mean, even to this day, there's no residential housing around it. It's truly a walk out in nature. A lot of wildlife on the property, 3,200 acres here. It's all high-fenced, so we don't have, all of our wildlife stays inside and everybody else's wildlife stays outside the gates. But it is definitely unique. It's still unique. And one of the cool things I will tell you that we used to do, and I laugh about this with other superintendents that I know that are actually close friends now, that we used to do product demonstrations, let's just say for BASF or Syngenta, and they would go into an area in the fairway and they would apply something, you know, sometimes too heavily, and it would actually burn or, you know, torch part of the fairway. And so since we were known as a research and demonstration golf course, we would just simply put a sign up and just say research in progress. and the end users just absolutely loved it. They're kind of like, oh man, that is so cool. You got a dead spot right in your fairway. But, you know, and then I laugh at these other superintendents because if they did that at their course, they'd probably get fired. So we had a little more leeway and it is still today. It is still very, very unique. We still do different types of tests on it. We are constantly trying to help other companies in the industry to, you know, figure out their products. And so we're not afraid to you know, to try new things here, for sure.
Can I ask a question about the process of this? Because it's fascinating. I know to Darren, too. You mentioned that the course was designed by Dr. Herdzin and Dana Fry. What was the chicken and egg process? Did you come to them? Did you approach them with this incredible, unique idea? Did they come and say, you know, we'd like to try something? I mean, their work is very well known,
right?
Especially Michael Herdzin, for being incredibly environmentally friendly and on the cutting edge of golf course and environment. Who came to whom, and how did that process work? Were they totally in from the beginning?
That's a great question. By the way, Dr. Herdzin, he's a hickory stick guy too, as you probably know.
Yep.
But so we used to sponsor an award for the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America at their annual conference in February, called the Environmental Steward Award. And so we were one of four sponsors. Our company was. I can't remember what year it was, but Dr. Herdzin was the featured speaker at this event, and I was actually on the dais, and we were going to, I think all the sponsors were going to say something, but I got to spend some time with Dr. Herdzin before the event for about 30 minutes, and I started talking to him about this project that I had in mind. It was the idea for the project was my project, or was my idea, but Dr. Herdzin really just fascinated me. I loved his environmental spin on you know, golf course architecture, and even our drive into Purcell Farms. One would note, hey, why did you put a 2.5 mile drive into your clubhouse when you could have come off another road and made it only, you know, a quarter mile or something like that? And Dr. Herdzin wrote a book on golf course architecture, and he talked about the concept of building anticipation for somebody who is like looking forward to playing a particular golf course. And if you can really take some time and build, you know, how everybody's got a different piece of property. I get that. But we had the opportunity to really put this very dramatic drive into the farm. It's got, you know, a herd of longhorns on it, on, you know, right when you come in, that kind of supports our logo for the golf course. And it goes across a little creek with a railroad trestle bridge, you know, that kind of clanks, and then goes through a forest and then up a hill and then back down. And you finally see the golf course, and it finally winds back to where you're going, but you've built up so much anticipation for what you're going to see, because the view sheds are absolutely gorgeous. We've got elevation on the property up to 1,100 feet, and we have probably one of the more dramatic golf holes that you will ever see, hole number 5, which is a 170-foot drop from tee to green, a par 3, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. You kind of work your way up on the side of this mountain, and you hit down at the green, and it could be a 230-yard shot, but you're hitting a 7-iron. It's just really, really fun and very, very memorable. So Dr. Herdzin, you know, they were very good at helping us come up with some very unique things for this unique project. So I feel like that they were just like the perfect architectural group to take on this challenge.
Well, certainly the golf course is dramatic, like you mentioned. And, you know, I think those par threes, the collection of par threes, are as good as you're going to find anywhere. Number 5, like you mentioned, called Hang Time. Number 8's called Back It Up. Number 17, Over the Water, is called Big Gulp. I mean, that's some challenging terrain they had to build in some golf holes into, in addition to the holes that that are very interesting, that kind of just run through the farmland as well. So it's a really nice mix of kind of interesting looks as you work your way through the golf course?
Yeah, you know, if you think about like typical golf courses, a lot of times the architects are a little hamstrung by the fact that they sometimes need to save some of the better property for housing lots and roadways and all kinds of things. So they're not given all the property in order to put a golf course in. And so the golf course really ends up or can end up more of a landscape, architecture piece that sells residential lots, or at least it used to be like that. And what Dr. Herdson and Dana were able to do here was to take a huge piece of property and essentially build one great golf course. It's not a walking golf course. In fact, I have never walked this course. I've walked 9 holes of it, just to say I did, but it's got some big climbs and things like that, but there's also a lot of real estate between a green and the next tee box. But what we wanted to do is utilize the best part of the land to create the, you know, just a great golf course, you know, the holes the way that they were designed. So again, very, very unique. Most people don't have that luxury when they're building a golf course, nor do they have that's just not really part of why they're doing it. You know, sometimes the golf courses end up being they're going to build a golf course, but they're going to make money on selling land around it. So, and I get that. That's fine. That's just not why we did it. And so we got some really, really wide quarters here, and we don't grow this Bermuda rough up too high because it's just not a whole lot of fun. We want golf to be fun and people to shoot, you know, a good score and be able to go out and hit their ball and maybe spray it around a little bit, still go find it and hit it. And I think that's a real good recipe for golf making a comeback.
Sounds fantastic. Sounds perfect. Before we leave these par threes, I just want to touch on something, and we're going to talk about the rest of Purcell Farms, because there's so much more to what you've created there. But I found it really interesting when I was reading about it, because I have not been lucky enough to be down there yet. But these par threes, every hole on the course has a name. They're all interesting. There's an incredible history throughout the golf course, all the way from the founding through the Civil War to different things that people can read about. But you, as the person behind this, there were a couple of them that really struck me that I want you to quickly tell the listeners that I just found funny. Number 8. Now, I'm not sure which one is Baby Rattler. What hole is that?
That's number 3.
Okay. Number 3 is called Baby Rattler for a reason. And number 8 is called Back It Up for a reason.
Yes.
You were involved, from what I understand, in both of those names, were you not?
Correct.
Okay. Could you just quickly tell the stories of those? Because when I read them, I just said, this is cool. This is why a place like this is so different.
Yeah, that's true. And so I remember when I once had the opportunity to play Augusta National, and that was like one of the first times I noticed that, oh, they named all the holes. That's pretty cool. Maybe we need to name our holes. And so we kind of went back to some stories. So I think that's the thing that people will, whether they're wanting to find out a little bit more about Purcell Farms or they come here, we are so story rich. There's a story behind everything. Fortunately for me, I'm like the master storyteller because I've lived through all of it, and a lot of it actually involves me. Let's talk with the 8th hole, which is a par 3 downhill. It's got about a 75-foot drop from tee to green, and it's called Back It Up. So I am out with Dana Fry, and a gentleman that worked with Herds and Fry. His name was David Welchel, and he was a designer as well. And so we're beginning to kind of move some dirt around, and they would kind of rough things out, and Dana would call me. I'd get on my four-wheeler. He'd say, hey, I need to show you something. And I went up to the 8th tee box where they kind of moved some dirt around, and they had the back tee was going to be, I guess, maybe about 200 yards from the green. And that was, you know, so it was going to be a relatively short par three. And I looked up the hill from there, and it kind of kept climbing up. It was a gradual slope, but I knew where number 7 green was going to be, and I knew that the cart path was going to probably meander through the woods. And I just told Dana and David Welchel, I said, look, back it up. It needs to go up. You know, I want to put the back tee about 260 yards away from the green. And so it's a flatter hole than hole number 5, but it's still just a really, really great hole. It was designed after a course down in Florida that I played, Black Diamond Ranch. Mm-hmm. And they had a long par three that had a big green, but really, I can't remember if I don't think they had any bunkers around it, or certainly not in front of the green. And so you normally had to hit a longer club, but even if you missed the green, you had a real easy chance to hit it on the green and make your par. And I liked that hole, but it wouldn't have been that unless we backed it up. So they did. You know, it's funny when an owner tells them to do something, they generally do it.
Isn't that funny?
and then hole number 3, Baby Rattler. I was actually playing in a family deal with my sons, and this was in the fall, and we got up on that tee box, and we were getting ready to hit, and we noticed there was this little very small baby rattler that was coiled up and kind of hissing at us, and it was, I mean, we could see it was a rattlesnake, but it was very, very small. It wasn't like a something that would, I wasn't going to stick my finger down there, but anyway, my one of my sons took care of that rattlesnake with his driver, but it was just something that happened on that tee box, and we couldn't come up with a better name for that hole. But we all we talked about that in our little family get-togethers ever since, and that happened about 10 years ago.
Well, baby snakes can be even more dangerous than big ones. So that was probably a good thing to do. Those are twin sons, is that right?
Correct. Yeah, they're 28, and both of them. In fact, all 6 of my children have worked at Purcell Farms at one point in time or another. Mm-hmm. And right now, there's only one son that is working here now. He's in sales and doing a great job. I've got a son-in-law that works here as well. So it's, you know, it's your quintessential family business.
What a great thing.
And I think, again, we have 81 guest suites now. We started off with 8. That was when we were bringing the golf course superintendents in here. And we had 2 beds in each room. So, you know, they had to kind of cozy up. But we have added, you know, at one time we just had a golf grill. Now we have 2 really nice restaurants and then the golf grill. So we have 3 dining opportunities on site. We have a spa. We have a wedding venue, a gorgeous, gorgeous wedding venue that I call the Augusta National of wedding venues because it's located right across the road from still on the property and actually right next to my house. But, you know, it's overseeded in the fall, winter, and spring. And our golf staff, the lawn is 22 acres. It's got an old plantation home and this beautiful, you know, wedding venue, and most of the weddings are outside, and it's only been open for 2 years now, but really, really popular in Alabama.
And Augusta National does not have a wedding venue.
No.
Well, for real.
I tell you what, I would have gotten married just on, you know,
yeah,
just
you.
Give me any part of Augusta National.
I'm with you. All right, so we have talked about the history. We have talked about the FarmLinks course, what makes it special, all the things that make it special. But that is just a small part of what Purcell Farms is about, and it's evolved so much beyond just golf. You mentioned the lodging. You mentioned some restaurants. You mentioned the spa. There's an Orvis shooting grounds there. The amenities at Purcell Farms are off the charts. At what point did you realize, okay, we're not just a golf course, we want to be all these other things, give people these amenities? Did they kind of flow together, the golf course come first and then follow with everything else once the course was established and drew people?
Yes, so really it was when we sold the fertilizer business. Our strategy was was paramount back in that time, and we were also pretty much a man cave. We were much more interested in the golf course superintendents coming here than, say, public golfers. We did not have extra lodging. Again, we just had the little small grill. But we had this wonderful place called Parker Lodge, which is still stands, the kind of towers over hole number 17 green, which is a par 3. And so when we sold the business, we did not sell the golf course because that was on the family farms. We sold the fertilizer technology, the patents, the trademarks, all the intellectual property. And we had to kind of go back and say, all right, well, now we've got to figure out what the strategy is going to be, because if we're not going to sell this very unique way to market the product, we're going to have to really look at getting into the resort business. And the way I describe it is, so that was 2006 when we sold the business. We started kind of thinking about what we were going to do. We had made a nice return on the sale of the business, and it took us a while. It was kind of like Moses wandering in the desert, after he was, he got to Israel, but he never stepped foot inside Israel. He was just kind of always on the outside, and I felt like that our indecision to really make a move in that. It turns out it was probably best because we were able to go around, look at a lot of really unique places out there and figure out what it was that we wanted to be. The golf course was never intended. It was never in my mind that one day this is going to be a resort or anything like that. This was always going to be our home. I'm actually speaking on the phone to you right now, but looking across the pasture at FarmLinks and the clubhouse there, and that's about a half mile from me. And we just really planned it out, and so we are a boutique resort. Again, 81 rooms. We don't have 500 rooms, so we can host smaller events. Or we can do a complete property sellout, and we have like 130 beds on property. And we just, we host weddings and small business meetings. A lot of golf groups come here. And then now with this new inn at Purcell Farms, which actually occupies our old corporate headquarters, and then we built onto that with all the guest rooms, and it's it's people come here who have been in the hospitality business, and they can't believe that it was once an office building for a fertilizer business. It was, it's kind of like it has been totally repurposed, but the view sheds off the backside, we have, that overlooks the number 18 green. It's just magnificent. And so really that's, we've just kind of had this metamorphosis into more of a classic hospitality play, but differentiated in the fact that we are, we're family owned. We're about 40 minutes southeast of Birmingham. We're 2 hours and 15 minutes from Atlanta, about 3 hours from Nashville.
Well, David, I've stayed in the inn, really just after it opened. I've been into the cottages, I've been into the cabins, and other people from the Golf Trip X team have stayed in both of those. When it comes to the rooms themselves, it seems as though you and the team spent a lot of time tending to the details that really make golf travel both comfortable and memorable. So what were some of the must-haves you realized you needed to have be part of that, of the accommodations?
Well, it's everything here is an extension of our family and of our home. And I would say that, we've been able to travel some nice places as well. So it was built in such a way, and the decor was done in such a way that we wanted to make it like a place that we would like, to go. And so for the cottages and cabins, first of all, my wife is our executive decorator, and she's really, really gifted. I mean, she didn't get that just because she was my wife. She is really, really talented. And I tell people I gave her an unlimited budget, and she busted right through the top of it. that was kind of scary, but she just, she designs interiors like, she would for our home. And, she wants people to feel, very, very comfortable. We've got a couple of guys working, for us who used to be with Ritz-Carlton, and, one of the guys told me, he said he had never seen, a headboard not screwed into a wall. And I'm like, I get it. That's what hotels do. They get these things and they kind of, multiply them throughout 500 rooms, and you end up with headboards screwed into a wall. So it's things such as that. I have a daughter who is our artist in residence, and she is she does oil portraits, and she's phenomenal. And I'm an artist. I was a commercial art major in college, and she just blows me away at what she's able to do. So we utilized her talents all across the property. She has oil paintings. All the rooms has some kind of an oil painting of a crane or an egret or something that is, found on Purcell Farms. And she can do it. And she's got three kids, and she lives out here on the farm as well. So, from that standpoint, the story is just, it's just such a family place. And I think that when people come here, I think that probably the thing I hear the most of when people come here is when they're driving into the farm, they feel a real peace come over them, a release from the city, from all their responsibility. They feel like they're detached from responsibilities, and they're coming to a place where they can rest. And that is something that our family really, sticks our chest out about. And, obviously a lot of that, God created the property, the land, and that type thing. And then we just kind of set the environment when people come.
Well, I definitely found that when I was there, and I would say the money was very well spent on the interiors. There's no doubt about that. One of the other places I want to move to another interior. The food and beverage might be the spot in the resort where I think you've really hit the nail on the head. The best of all. I mean, Arrington is a higher end Southern cuisine restaurant, but what I want to focus on and was really blown away by the menu and the ambience of Old Tom's Pub. You can get pizza, burgers, beverages, some of the best milkshakes I've had, certainly throughout the South.
That's a big compliment, David. That's a really big compliment.
And yeah, you can shoot pool on Gomer Pyle's pool table. So, you know, what went into the decision making for creating those kind of key spots where golfers and their spouses and their families are going to hang out when they're not out on the golf course?
Yeah, so Old Tom's, it was named after Old Tom Morris, and that was really to celebrate the over 10,000 golf course superintendents that have visited Purcell Farms through the years. He's considered to be the great grandfather of golf course superintendents. It's kind of done in a Scottish theme, very casual, a big place just for people to come and hang out, great view sheds over the 18th hole. You mentioned Gomer Pyle's pool table. So the listeners may not know this, probably don't, that Jim Nabors, Gomer Pyle, was born and raised in Sylacauga, Alabama. And he grew up with my mother's family. So they were very close, and Jim Nabors was a very poor kid growing up, very talented, had lots of friends around, but especially my mother's family. Kind of a long story, but my father was from a neighboring community called Talladega, where they had the raceway, and that's about 20 miles from Sylacauga. It's the county seat here in this county. And he was playing football back in 1947 against Sylacauga. He ends up breaking his leg in that game, goes into the hospital, has to stay in the hospital for a couple of days. Jim Nabors, who was the same age as my father, got a bunch of the local kids from Sylacauga High School. They all went up to the hospital to visit the Talladega kid who broke his leg just to cheer him up. So that began a friendship between my father and Jim Nabors. Fast forward a year or two, now my dad's at Auburn, Jim Nabors is at University of Alabama, and Jim Nabors wants to take my father to the Parker's home to show him a new invention. He says, there's this new thing out, and you're not going to believe it. Well, my grandfather had one of the first electric razors, and so that's what he wanted to show him was an electric razor. And so they're over there seeing that electric razor, but, of course, in walks my mother, who had never met my father, Gomer, Jim, introduces them. They fall in love, get married, and then they have me, so I owe my very existence to Gomer Pyle.
You're saying that Gomer Pyle was responsible. That is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, you know, somebody's responsible for all of us.
Of course.
But, you know, somebody introduced your mother to your father. In my case, it was truly Gomer Pyle. but anyway, so Jim Nabors remained very, very close friends with my parents. In fact, he actually sang, ushered, and was best man in their wedding in 1953 out in Sacramento, California. My grandfather had loaned him some money to go out to Hollywood to make it big in show business, but Jim Nabors did not get his... He got his first break with the Andy Griffith Show in 1963. So Jim Nabors used to come to my house when I was a kid, and he was very, very successful. Of course, everybody was so proud of him here, and he'd drive up in a new T-Bird and have a full-length mink coat and, you know, rings and all kinds of stuff. He was, you know, doing the Hollywood thing. So go go all the way through for 40 plus years, and he would come to Purcell Farms. He was here the day we opened the golf course as well. And but he had moved to Honolulu, Hawaii, and so all his furnishings that was in his from his Bel Air home in Hollywood area, he put into storage, and for 40 years it just sat there. Well, he used to tell Ellen and me that he says, "Hey, y'all can have anything from my Bel Air home that you want for your new project that you're building." So about 5 years ago, Ellen and I flew out to Honolulu and stayed in his home right off Diamond Head. And we went to a couple of storage units, and we went through all of this furniture, all this stuff from his Bel Air home. And it was amazing, you know, because he had not seen it in 40 years. In fact, he couldn't hardly remember what all was in there. But we, you know, he gave us all kinds of things that, and our guests, when they come to Purcell Farms, they are able to see some of these. But one of which you said was this pool table that was, it's like a 1903 antique Brunswick pool table. Perfect shape, you know, had all the original balls and, you know, pool cues. And I, you know, I was like, well, I'm not sure I want to ship this from Honolulu to Alabama. And I asked him, you know, I told you guys, I said, look, I'm interested in stories here. So I asked him, I said, who has played on that pool table? And he says, everybody. And I'm like, well, who is everybody? He says, well, everybody that came to my house back before 1975, so, you know, he was big from about 1965 to 1975, and he had this mansion there. And so I said, I want to know who has actually played on that pool table, you know, just names. Give me some names. And so he started rattling off some names that were, you know, the Hollywood A-listers, such as Ronald Reagan, you know, the Rat Pack, which was, you know, Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr., you know, Burt Reynolds, Bing Crosby, Lucille Ball, Carol Burnett, Dolly Parton, Burt Reynolds. So all these people had played on that pool table, and the most famous ones were the Jackson Five. Wow. And I'm like, the Jackson Five? He says, yeah. He says, I was the first one ever to put the Jackson Five on national TV. And because he had a variety show after Gomer Pyle USMC. And you can actually go to YouTube. In fact, some of you listeners, you might go to Jim Nabors Jackson Five, or Jim Nabors Hour, Jackson 5, and you can go and watch the skits that he did with, you know, the Jackson 5 and little Michael Jackson, you know, running around. So he said that the Jackson 5 used to come over to his home because he had them on the show a few times. And, you know, to have a pool table at a little obscure place out here that both Ronald Reagan and Michael Jackson played on, I think is pretty unique.
Well, it's super cool. And, you know, I shot pool there one night with a friend for a couple of hours. And like I said, the menu is just fantastic. It's kind of a Scottish-American gastropub. You can get pretty much everything you want there. And, yeah, you can do your share of drinking. You can do your share of everything you want in there. It's a really good place to enjoy an evening.
Okay, David. So there's a question I want to ask you, because Alabama certainly has a golf 800-pound gorilla when it comes to golf marketing. That is, of course, the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. Are there challenges to setting yourself apart at FarmLinks, at Purcell Farms? Well, at the same time, obviously, all of you work to promote Alabama tourism and bring golfers to the state.
Yes, there's that is a pretty good description of the Robert Trent Jones Trail. Which is owned by the Retirement Systems of Alabama. which is my, you know, partially paid by my tax dollars, that is, you know, our biggest competition here in the state. But, you know, they've done a good job of getting golfers, you know, the golf groups, golf tourism into Alabama. It started back in the early 90s. I think it's changed a lot now. I think that even their positioning, they're probably going, it's not, they're still going outside the state and trying to you know, promote golf travel into Alabama. But they're also very aggressive in the state, you know, with pricing and stuff like that. So how do we compete with them? We just try to do everything better. Very, very unique, and everything that we do has a story. And I think that that resonates with a lot of people. We, you know, we have 18 holes and they have, what, 468 golf holes. So they have so much more to offer than we do. But, you know, we just do things our way. It's really no different than when we were in the, you know, competing in the fertilizer business. And you just gotta find a way to be yourself and don't be intimidated by the, you know, the 800 pound gorilla that's, you know, that you're competing with. You just gotta find a way to be, you know, you gotta find a way to be better. And the only way I know to do that is really to be different and just, you know, do hospitality in an unrivaled way. And that's kind of what we're trying to do here. We're family owned, you know, we're not a Marriott. And, but we all coexist. We've got actually six trail, Robert Trent Jones trail sites within an hour of us. So it's kind of interesting from that standpoint, but,
yeah, I think you've done a great job. It's just, you really set yourself apart. You know, what's next for Purcell Farms? You've done so much. Is there a thought of more golf? Is there a thought of something that maybe the rest of us, you know, doesn't readily come to mind that you've got in your hip pocket that you think, this is what we really need to keep the upward trajectory of Purcell Farms?
Yeah. So I would say, the thing that I'm really trying to learn right now is just about, development here. And, you know, we got a big piece of property, that could be used in a number of ways. So since we live out here, this is not like a passive investment that we, you know, we want to make sure if something's done out here, it's done right and it's done what we call the Purcell way. But so definitely, you know, looking at the possibility of maybe 9 more holes of golf if it warrants it and if we know, you know, that we can make money on it. And it's, you know, we got enough property to put 2 more 18-hole golf courses easy out here. But, you know, again, we're just going to kind of take the long view approach to it. We're not in a hurry to do anything. Anything that we do will be done, you know, as good as we can do it and as well thought out as it can possibly be done. And so far, everything's turned out, you know, so well that, you know, my biggest deal, in fact, my father always would tell me, he would say, son, just don't screw it up, you know. So that's the reason why it took 20 years to get to where we are right now. But I would say that's probably the next frontier for us.
Well, I think both Darren, as I said, has been there. I have not, but you had me when, well, you had me before it, but when you started talking about what you want people to feel on the 2.5 mile drive, about getting away, about relaxing, about really escaping, and that kind of passion that you clearly show, just grabbed me. I wish I could get in my car right now. I think my wife would have a little bit of a problem with it, but I wish I could. I wish I could just get in the car and drive down there, because it sounds like you've done everything perfectly up to now. There's no reason why that's not going to continue. I can't thank you enough for taking this much time and talking to us about FarmLinks and Purcell Farms. I know both Darren and I are big fans. I can't wait to get down there. I'm sure Darren can't wait to get back. Thanks, David Purcell.
Well, thank you guys. And, you know, if any of your listeners want to look us up on the web, they can go to www.purcellfarms.com. And that's PURSELLFARMS. And we'd love to have anybody come down or just check us out. And, hey, just plan a golf trip and come down and relax for a while.
Sounds like heaven to me. You can also find on Instagram, and I suggest you do that, at Purcell Farms on Instagram. A lot of great stuff on there, too. So thanks again to David, Darren. I'll be talking to you soon. This has been a gas. Thanks, man.
Oh, it's been a great one. And as always, it's been a great one. But certainly, I never get tired of talking about farm links, and we'll get down there soon so we can talk about it some more.
You know, everybody at David Purcell's house and going back over 100 years had a dream about this place. Clearly, they've accomplished it. We hope you can run down your dream, too. So long.